This is a mystery story, and I wish with all my heart and soul that it wasn't a true story, but unfortunately it is. This story is but one of an ongoing barrage of shellings that have been inflicted upon the residents of Gaza. In Gaza, Ismail and Hassan died instantly. They were not members of any resistance or combatants in the Gaza-Israeli conflict.
بدي اركب سياره بدي اعيش زي بقيه العالم هذه ابسط رساله بوصل لهم اياها لانه يعني احنا هنا مش عايشين احنا لنا 3 سنين 4 سنين في حصار وقبل الحصار انتفاضات واحتلال يعني عندنا مدمرين احنا نفسيا اجتماعيا ما فيش عندنا اي مقومات للحياه
This is an event that I will remember for my entire life. I was in Gaza, just across the border behind me, and it was 10, maybe 10:30 at night, and I heard this explosion, this huge, huge sound that pierced right into my soul, and it was a bomb. It was aimed at a police station just down the road, and I felt that it was aimed directly at me. And I remember sitting up stark in bed and thinking to myself, oh my God, this is the way fish have to feel in a barrel, because there is nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. And this has got to be the way Gazans feel all the time. And I can't get this image out of my mind that if you're a fish in a barrel, there is no escape. And if you try to jump out of the barrel, you die. This is a mystery story, and I wish with all my heart and soul that it wasn't a true story, but unfortunately it is, as three people have died. Ismail Oda was 16 years old. His friend, his son, was the same age, and Ismail's grandfather was 91 years old. They died not very far from here, just on the other side of the border. They died from artillery shells that were fired directly at them. What needs to be asked is why those artillery shells were fired. Was there valid justification? And in this case, if errors of judgment or incompetence took place, will those responsible ever be held accountable for their actions? This story is but one of an ongoing barrage of shellings that have been inflicted upon the residents of Gaza. Since the end of Operation Cast Lead, according to the Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem, 118 have been killed by Israeli security forces. In Gaza, Ismail Hassan and Abu Sayyad died instantly, literally torn apart. They were not members of any resistance or combatants in the Gazan-Israeli conflict.
احنا سمعنا صوت انفجارات يعني بس ما كناش عارفين يعني ايش الموجود او مكان يعني بعيد شويه بعدين فجاه بلغنا انه في حالات حتيجي جهزنا حالنا في قسم الاستقبال والطوارئ وبعدين اجانا حالتين شهداء عباره عن اشلاء وبعدين بفتره جابوا كمان شهيد.
To tell the story of what happened here in Gaza, it needs to be put together from many parts of a complex puzzle. We first need to understand what exactly happened on this open ground, in direct line of sight to the Israeli frontier. Then, we must explore the context in which this tiny enclave of Gaza became encircled and cut off from the world around it by a siege and blockade and enforced by a 300-meter military zone where anyone entering is immediately a target. Today, with a deep mistrust and a high level of tension along the border, we have to explore the rules of engagement. It is important to understand the highly sophisticated surveillance technology used along the frontier to help keep Gaza under siege. Children and young people have died, and it is troubling to know they will continue to die under the current Israeli policy.
دائما العصر بقعد هنا تبقى الدنيا براد بيسوي براد شاي ويجي بقعد هنا والغنم سرحات هنا حين ما صار القصف بالضبط عاد لما صار القصف كل واحد شرد في شكته وشي شرد هيك والولد شرد هيك اثنين استشهدوا في النت في هذا وواحد استشهد هناك
بالنسبة كطبيب يعني بنحب يعني انه خاصة الشعب الامريكي انه توصلوا صورة واضحة للي بيعيشوا الشعب الفلسطيني كيف بتعرض ل عمليات قتل غير إنسانية يعني إن بيجينا الإنسان بإصابات بتغير من ملامحه الإنسانية بتقدريش تحدد إنه هذا إنسان من كتر ما هو فيه تشوهات في جسمه وحروقات وتقطيع في أوصاله فأنت بتحس إنه بتتفاجأ إنه الإنسان كيف فجأة بيكون إنسان وفجأة بتغير لشيء غير واضح المعالم أو ما فيش فيه أي شكل إنسان بتحول.
Security for the Israelis is deeply rooted in their national identity and philosophy. This plays out along the Israeli-Gaza border that has one of the most, if not the most, sophisticated surveillance systems in the world. Using radar, video cameras, pilotless drones, nothing escapes attention. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the Israeli Defense Force is proud of their efforts, as seen in this promotional video.
יש לנו היום סביב רצועת עזה מערך איסוף נייח צפוף שלמעשה אין לו אח ורע לא בצבא אם תרצו לא מכיר בשום מקום אחר בעולם שמצד אחד מערכות גילוי ומצד שני מערכות חקירה שנמצאות סביב כל הרצועה
ושאר התג'הם غلب والله لأنهم قتلوا ناس أبرياء في الشيلهم لا لهم في مقاومة ولا لهم في غير ولا في حاجة ولا في تنظيم ولا في وهم عارفين يعني عارفين كل شخص أنا عارفينه إيش بيسوي يوم يوم هاي الكاميرات وهاي اللي قبالنا يعني مقابلين يوم يوم بيشوفونا يعني يطلعوا بننزل يعني في محتمل ألقيته وإحنا واقفين يضربونا فيش أمان يعني اتصلت على الوالد أنا على الحج لما سمعت القصف اتصلت على الحاج ما حدش برد رن بيجي 30 مكالمه رد علي في الاخر على تليفون الحاج سواق الاسعاف بقول له مين معي قال لي انا يسر المصري سواق اسعاف بقول له طب صاحب التليفون وين قال لي معي الحاج هيو معي والولد معي بس قلت له كيف اصابتهم قال لي حارجه هم مستشهدين ماخذينهم من المستشفى بس ما رضيش يعني بلغنا على طول لما وصلت المستشفى لقيتهم مستشهدين هم
So where does this leave us in the story? In Gaza, we know three violently died along with 29 out of 30 of their flock of sheep. We know they were killed by artillery shells containing flechettes, spiked shrapnel designed to cut through flesh. We know the Israelis have an incredibly sophisticated surveillance system and that they must have known of the Oda family's daily presence in the field. The answers to what happened lie not only in the facts of the actual events, which are slowly emerging, but of the political environment in which they took place. To help sort out the social and political relationships between Palestinians and Israelis, Reverend Alex Awad, Dean of Students at Bethlehem Bible College, is an excellent source of reference. A Palestinian, educated in America and now living in Bethlehem, he gives regular briefings to visiting international delegations.
We, as Palestinians, we have a perspective. You know, it may not be the only perspective, but it is our perspective. This is how we feel about what has been happening here in the last, say, 100 years. By saying this is a Palestinian perspective, I'm not saying that all other perspectives are wrong. You know, you remember the story of the four blind people who had to describe an elephant. Each of them touched the elephant from a different side, and each of them described the side that he touched.
We later talked about the social and psychological factors that create the conditions keeping the conflict alive.
It's rooted in Jewish history, and it's rooted in the persecution of the Jews throughout Europe. That psychological factor makes many Jews, not all Jews, but many Jews say, never again, enough is enough. We cannot be passive, we cannot be mild, we have to be strong. We have to take the initiative, we have to do the preemptive, we have to subjugate the enemy before the enemy gets us. Other Israelis are really convinced that this is biblical land. This is Samaria, Judea, whatever you call it, the land of the promise, the promised land, Gaza. And this land should always be a Jewish inheritance. And this land is promised to the Jews by God, and therefore they are the only ones entitled to the land. And when you have an ideology like this, you are willing to die for it.
The issue is the threats to the existence of the Palestinians. That the situation is not that it is a territory that God has given to a certain people or certain states. God never did so. God never, to the best of my knowledge and your knowledge, I believe, has worked in real estate business to allocate certain piece of land to certain people. This never happened. And talk about that is absolute nonsense. But what should determine the situation is international law. Is international law.
Amr Moussa, as the immediate past Secretary General of the Arab League, represented all Arab nations, and as such, he had an intimate knowledge of the attitudes and perceptions within the Palestinian community. His reference to international law brings us full circle back to the border. And the questions for the Israelis: what initiated the shelling into a flock of sheep? Now, I have some answers. Perhaps they're genuine. Perhaps they're simply excuses for political motivations. Perhaps they all should be taken to an international court of law. But for the record, on September 12th, the day of the shelling, the IDF issued a statement to the press. A short while ago, IDF soldiers identified a number of subjects attempting to fire an RPG in their direction. The soldiers returned fire towards the subjects, who were apparently hit. So there's a key phrase here that needs investigation, and that is that the IDF fired back. Now, indeed, 3 days later, the Israeli Defense Forces issued a second memo. They issued it to selective members of the press, which stated, in light of the fact that there was many press reports that stated that these were not combatants, that indeed that was correct. Brigadier General Eyal Eisenberg, then commander of the Southern Command, would clarify, "We understand from a recreation that we undertook that the three casualties were not involved in an act of terror." The statement insisted, however, that one of the Palestinians had picked up an RPG launcher
and aimed it at Israeli forces. By all accounts on the Gaza side, this is denied, and it leads to some troubling questions. A rocket grenade launcher is not a casual small arms weapon, and the notion that it would be simply left where it could be found, armed and aimed by two teenagers who have no previous experience, is difficult to believe. So this leads us back to an examination not only of the facts in this case, but of the Israeli military and social mindset. An organization, Breaking the Silence, can help us. They are a group of former Israeli Defense Force members who today are helping open a window of understanding into the attitudes pervasive within the military.
So I'm Avichai Stoller. I've been a member of Breaking the Silence for the past 2.5 years. And Breaking the Silence is an organization of ex-IDF soldiers, mostly combat soldiers, that what we're trying to do is somehow bring a picture of the reality of what goes on in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip to the public. I mean, we believe that there is this gap between what we experienced and took part in as soldiers throughout the last 10 years and what actually reaches the public. You get to active duty. I mean, you're supposed to somehow, you know, differentiate between the gunmen and the civilians. But again, in many ways, I mean, a lot of your effort is towards the civilian population. I mean, we would go inside Palestinian towns every now and then, when in the briefings before that we were told that we need to create this feeling of uncertainty among the Palestinian societies. In many ways, at 99% of the times, it's the civilians that you are working against. You are constantly told, even after your station, not only in your training, that the military doesn't deal with politics. And you are in many ways just here to protect the people of Israel, like an Israeli defense force. But of course, politics are inseparable part of what you're doing. I mean, but in many ways, you don't know it. You don't know the things that are happening around you.
والله رفعنا قضية وإن شاء الله بنتأمل الخير يعني لأنه زلم كبير اختيار عمره 91 سنة وشاب 16 سنة سرحين بغنم وزي ما أنتم شايفين كل الغنم رميات يعني لا بضرب صواريخ ولا حاجة ويعني هاي الموقع قبالهم وشايفينهم يومهم لنا كم سنة من قبل الحرب قبل وهذا الموقع كشفنا والموقع الثاني كشفنا ويرز كل يعني شايفيننا نطلع بننزل كل يوم على بنيجي هنا الساعة 6 بروح بعد أذان المغرب يوم يعني بعرف إيش اللي صار ما هو اعتذر عاود اليهود قالوا كتلناهم بالخطأ نزلوا في الجريدة وفي الأخبار.
So we have to ask, will it be possible for the Oda family to bring the Israeli military to court to find justice or receive compensation? I put that question to two law professors. Yuval Shaney specializes in international law at Hebrew University in Jerusalem. Valentina Azarov teaches human rights law at El Quds University.
As you may know, there are many cases that have recently been rejected because petitioners, claimants from the Gaza Strip are unable to enter Israel in order to go to these hearings. The solution was by the Attorney General that these cases cannot stand. So de facto, there is no longer any recourse to civil courts for compensation claims by Gaza claimants. And the criminal level, when it comes to holding the perpetrator and in terms of criminal responsibility, Israel has shown a consistently unwilling and ingenuine approach to holding soldiers accountable, looking into command responsibility. Political and military officials were very directly, explicitly stating that the civilian population is equally culpable as a group and will be targeted as a group. So the whole Gaza Strip is seen as hostile and therefore a legitimate target.
Well, there is no great interest within Israeli society in upholding accountability in a very rigid manner. partly because, as I said before, there is a sense of the duty we owe the soldiers. We send the soldiers to risk their lives. And by cracking down too hardly on them, we may disincentivize our future soldiers. I mean, they would be too reluctant to go on the battlefield. And secondly, I think there is some, maybe within the Israeli public, I certainly not among them, but something that the Palestinians, are the ones to blame for everything that happened in Gaza, because they were shooting from civilian locations, so they should assume the consequences. And I think some simply are not interested in this. They want to move on. I think it's pitiful, but I think, unfortunately, this is an almost universal condition where militaries are and societies are very slow and very haphazard about, very reluctant about ensuring accountability in those circumstances.
Well, Gaza has, of course, been for a very long time a very special case, even before the disengagement plans, when Israel started to claim that Gaza is no longer occupied. Now, of course, the international community has not recognized any of that. Gaza is occupied territory, and Israel is considered to be in effective control of the majority of that territory, with potential control over all of it, and seen as an occupying power that has the same obligations under the Geneva Conventions, namely the fourth, as it does in the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem. But since Israel does not see things that way, the military doctrine that applies, including the targeting threshold and the way that a threat is perceived by a soldier on the ground, effectively, at the end of the day, is different to that that applies in the West Bank. So, of course, under that that premise, much more is allowed to happen, and it does.
And this leads us back to this field. The story, at the end of the day, is about one family. Their lives will never be the same. And it's a sad point of historical fact that Gaza's future is very terrifying.
طبعا والله بعد اللي صار بحس بالخوف بس ارضي بقدرش اسيبها بحس بالخوف طبعا انا يعني في الاول بقيت مأمن مش مأمن مأمن بس مأمن شويه بس لقيت فيش امان بالمره يعني هي كل تبهدلت كل ما ضلش شيء هذا مطرح الغنم بقى كله كسر وهذاك في جهاز راح بيجي 40 جهاز وفغصوها كله مع القديم كله والحج الله يرحمه الاولاد اللي معاه الاثنين راح.
Violence along the border is ever present. And the true facts of the shelling will continue to be hidden behind a wall of military half-truths and political rhetoric. The future for the Oda family and the rest of the residents of Gaza is completely unknown, as much of their fate is tied to internal and external decisions over which they have no control. And at the end of the day, this leads us out of Gaza to Dublin, Ireland, and to the Foreign Affairs Committee of the Irish Legislature. Here, a religious delegation of Palestinian Christians came from Gaza to make a case for support for justice in the international arena. And as Palestinians struggle to find resolution to the issues they face each day, the words of Reverend Monsignor Manuel Musala hold out both a challenge and a vision.
I am a Palestinian priest, and I suffered all what happened to my people since my childhood till now. We spoke too much about the crimes of war, the war crimes. We spoke too much about the crimes against humanity. I was in Gaza during the war. I suffered with my people for 22 days. Palestinians, even with all we have suffered, we don't want to die to liberate Palestine. We want to live to build Palestine. with the whole difficulties, the whole crimes, the whole war, we say as Palestinians, peace is possible if justice is possible. Peace is possible if truth is possible.